Welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405 with your host, Will Crist.
Welcome to Pilgrim Talks today. There are people in our world who are just astounding. What they do is short of incredible. I mean, I rarely use incredible because that means not believable. And these people are very believable, but they're outstanding. They're awesome. They have moved in a direction, probably following their passion, but they're also following a need, a genuine need. Scott Trotter is one of those people. He took an interesting turn in his leadership career. After working at Disney and in venture capital, this Northwestern MBA that he had began to narrow him down, and so he began to make a commitment to give back to his community. And his next step led him to the Child Abuse Prevention Center. His passion for children and for helping people reach their potential has helped create the largest organization dedicated to preventing child abuse in Orange County. And in these tough economic times, advocating for those in need is critical, and making fast, accurate decisions about resources is crucial. When you combine the passion to help people, the commitment to help those in need, with a business sense and the discipline of making resources, stretching them stretching them as far as they can go, but at the same time monitoring and measuring not only what you have and how they're being used, but the impact of that and finding out what kind of return you're getting on those investments that you're making. All those things are the kind of things that Scott Trotter brings to this business. He's been the executive director for the Child Abuse Center of Orange County since August of 2006. He provides leadership to a volunteer board of directors and a staff of over 80 employees. He helped shape the Prevention Center family's focused prevention programs. Now, I'm going to let him tell you, but I'll tell you before we get there that he is committed to fulfilling the Prevention Center's mission of serving at-risk children and families with programs that break the generational cycle of child abuse and family violence. So, welcome, Scott.
Will, thank you so much for having me on Pilgrim Talks Radio. This is a fantastic opportunity to draw attention to something that's very near and dear to my heart, as well as about 500 of us that rally behind this organization to help the almost 2,000 families that we directly serve.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. We want to applaud and thank you praise you for this commitment that you have to serving at-risk children. So tell us a little bit of, I want you to tell us about your experience, but also want you to tell us about the gravity and the size of the problem in Orange County. So which would you like to begin with?
Well, gravity and size always is a pulling factor for me. Will, I want to pause, though, and you're thanking me, but in fact, everybody who is either a parent or an aunt or an uncle or is somehow related to a child is taking up this cause. We all, for the majority of us, appreciate, love, and support the growth of our children. It's really a vital thing, and I think it's a common thing that we all understand, that when we look in the eyes of a child, that is our future. Everything that we can invest in that child and every bit of help that we can give that child to reach its potential is something that creates a really great society for us. So I can't underscore enough how much positive work is done in our community by people even in their own homes. So that's a wonderful thing. That said, Will, you're right. It is a very significant issue. In the county of Orange alone, there are about 35,000 calls a year for children who are at risk of child abuse. And these are calls that are coming from mandated reporters. Those are people like school teachers, police officers, doctors and nurses, social workers, people who are trained to, have the responsibility of identifying a child who has been abused. In our county of Orange, because it's only those people who report, they report about 35,000, it's thought that the actual number of children who are victims of abuse are up to four or five times that amount. Now, in this county, you can pretty quickly get to a number that says about one in four children may be subjected to abuse. You know, that alone is a very staggering number, but it becomes even more staggering when you think about the long-term implications of a child who's been subjected to abuse. Don't want to bury you with statistics, but there are all kinds of studies that look at the value of prevention, of preventing abuse from happening versus the cost of letting it go unchecked. And those studies all kind of settle around a similar number. $1 spent now or 1 hour of effort spent now in helping a kid and trying to prevent child abuse from happening, you know, one unit right now ends up saving us as a community anywhere from 10 to 20 units later. So a dollar now saves us $10 to $20 later. Those are very conservative studies, and they're all very well quantified. So I think as a former business community person, but definitely an organizational leader who is challenged with allocating resources, for my dollar, spending time and effort on the prevention end is where it's at.
Well, and I got to tell you, my heart breaks when I see the kind of cuts that we make to all of these prevention programs, because I know that they're going to result not only do they break because people are being hurt by it, but just from a business perspective, economic perspective, that's going to put tremendous pressure on the system later on in terms of jail, incarceration, courts, all of that, right?
Yeah, you are so right. We have not yet begun to even see the impact of these shifts in our resources. And I invite everybody to see it in a broad context. It's not necessarily government versus private sector. It's not necessarily Democrat, Republican. I think broadly as a community, There are some fundamental things that we know work, and what we do know work is what we do know that works is reaching out to people when problems start to arise. And when you begin to know a family that's at risk for child abuse or has a history of domestic violence, or maybe has a dad who's chemically dependent, has a drug problem, or maybe has a mom who's bipolar, has a mental health challenge, when you begin to know these families, you start to see that there is a pattern, a cycle, a set of models that the kids pick up on. You know, mom and dad aren't necessarily present, or they're present in a very violent way. And every time a child is exposed to that kind of behavior from a parent or an uncle or an aunt, and tragically when they're exposed to somebody like a Sandusky in the Penn State situations, that creates a trauma for that child. And when you add up enough of those traumas, those are the models that govern that kid's development. And so when they approach the world and they approach uncertainty and they have challenges, they gravitate to those models, and that gravity is what reinforces what we call a generational cycle. Their behavior defaults to the things that they learned as kids. What we try to do at the Child Abuse Prevention Center is engage with families who have said, hey, I'm in that bad place. Can you help me get out of it? And so we teach parenting skills. We take them through structured curriculums. We go to their homes to do that. We also teach parenting classes. We provide in-home mental health, in-home therapies. But basically, you know, the business that we are in is getting to families who are in that desperate situation and creating hope. Hope is the very first thing that somebody has to have in order to break out of that generational cycle. And we see wonderful results.
Well, you know, I spend Christmas and Easter in Alaska in the Native villages. And Native villages in many respects are in a better place than they've ever been. You know, some of these villages have 90 people, some have 300,000. But those issues of family abuse are still there. There's no question in my mind that number one, it's a generational issue, and number two, it's got to do with lack of purpose, which I suppose, does that connect with hope?
Directly. I think you know, I can't speak as an expert on the topic of purpose, but I do know that when it comes to our families that we work with, the participants in our program, if we can set that frame and give them the idea that not only step one, can you have hope that this does not have to be your recurring future, but step two, there is a practical way to work through this. And that's where our structured parenting curriculums come in, our structured approach to engaging with medical support or structured mental health approach comes. It gives them purpose week to week to come back and practice a different set of behaviors, behaviors of engaging with their child. And the children begin to see that change. I one of our case staff just finished working with Teresa, who's a mother of two children. She's had a history of domestic violence for years, and it escalated to a culmination when her husband, the father of her second child, had her on the ground and she was pregnant. And it rips my heart to tell the story, but he was kicking her in the stomach. And it was her mother that intervened and got her out of that situation alive. The father of her child was on top of her, choking her, kicking her. She then used that as a moment of epiphany to say, hey, something's got to change. I don't know what, but something's got to change. And she engaged with our program. We call it Home Visitation Toddler. Her first child was around 3-4 years old when we first met with her. And our case staff, Leticia, was there meeting with her in her home. And the three-year-old was kind of jealous of the attention that Leticia was getting from mom, and so she started to hit mom. And mom, Teresa, turned to her daughter and said, hey, please don't hit your mother. Please, that's not appropriate. And the three-year-old turned back and said, well, you know, you never stop dad when he hits you, so why should I stop? And this was a very distraught child. But obviously, a child who is going to grab onto that generational model and continue it forward. What's happened after 6 months of working very diligently with Teresa is she worked all the way through our positive parenting program, which is a model curriculum, and now her daughter has somebody to respect and look up to and understand positive discipline versus punishment. Reinforcing respect, helping that child understand that there is a different way to go rather than just trying to physically control or abuse the things that threaten her. So we're seeing wonderful results when we do engage with families. And, you know, that's the wonderful, enthusiastic part of and rewarding part of being in the prevention end of things. You know, every day we come in, we see families who are in really tough situations, significantly some days and other days just barely, but always improve. It's very rewarding.
Well, let's talk about that. What do we do? How do we as a culture, as a country, how do we handle this need for intervention, training, nurturing, generational change? How do we handle that up against resources and taxation and issues like that? How do you speak to people? I mean, we are in one of the most conservative, I guess outside of Florida, one of the most conservative areas in terms of taxation. Yet we have this huge problem here. What do you say to that?
Well, I say, who are you? And you're usually, in terms of helping, you're one of three people. And, of course, the world doesn't simplify that easily. But if you are somebody who is in a situation where you're inclined to abuse, and you can look at yourself and say, yeah, I have these behaviors, then I would say to you, how you can help us best is by helping yourself. And reach out for help. Jump onto Google. Google Child Abuse Prevention Orange County, you'll come to our website. Or Google domestic violence, you'll get all kinds of resources and begin to learn about somebody that can help you. There are all kinds of resources out there. It's a more difficult time, and this leads into the second kind of person that you could be. you could be a person in a position to influence resources and where they move. Now, that's just about every one of us. Taxpayers can vote. Government officials can move their budgets around. Business people can advocate. But we are a community of resources, and a lot of them are shifting away from the prevention end. It's very, very important that we understand the magnitude of the issues that aren't just happening today, but will happen tomorrow and for the next 5 years and then the next five after that. For this audience, this second type of person, that is the person who can influence resources, I say to you, join on to our bandwagon, and that is that we are going to end child abuse in the next 50 years. It will not exist. And if we take that attitude, then today is the day to start preventing it rather than just focusing on intervention. Let's prevent it. Let's work with each other. Let's work with families that self-select. And that gets into the third category of person, and that is, what can I do myself? What can I do to improve my behavior? How can I interact with children better? How can I think about how I reach out to my sister's kids better? And everybody has an opportunity to influence the development of a child, whether you've got one or not. There are behaviors that are best practices, listening to children, creating a space for them to expound and explore, embracing a child who makes a mistake, but making sure that they understand why that mistake occurred, not punishing them, but rather allowing them to understand the rules and disciplining. And there are all kinds of debates about discipline. I'm not going to come down black or white on any particular issue except to say discipline should have the goal of empathizing with a child to develop them into a better person. It should not have the goal of control and power. And ask yourself that as an adult, as somebody responsible for this community, even if you're not in the direct responsibility of children, if you're the leader of an organization, ask yourself how you interact with your staff. And that kind of behavior then is modeled throughout and eventually affects a child. So, you know, Will, that's kind of how I might respond to that question of, hey, what can we do as a community? We can either improve our own skills, we can influence the way that resources go around, or if we're one of those families that's really desperately in need, reach out for a resource. Reach out.
Do you think that most of the people in Orange County recognize that we have, I think from your numbers, over 100,000 children that are either abused or at risk to be abused every year?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think that this is an issue that's very difficult to lift and put in front of people because it's a tough story. And, you know, to speak in terms of my nephew, it's a downer because it sounds like that on the surface of it. And what I think we need to address in this county is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a downer. There are answers. So facing the problem doesn't mean we have to get mired in the problem. It means that we can face it and then begin to solve it. But that is the first step as a community, having the courage to face these issues. And, you know, I have to say, Will, we've come a long, long way in the last 20 years. I think, you know, and earlier in the discussion I referred to Mr. Sandusky and the Penn State affair only because it gets so much attention. But I will tell you, the way that organization responded here in 2011 and 12 is pretty different than how organizations would have responded back in the 80s and 90s. And I credit that to a maturing of our community, a higher placement of value more consistently across socioeconomic lines of how important kids are, and our experience at looking at these things in big organizations where things have gone wrong and learning from it. We now have groups of people taking responsibility for the behavior of one person amongst them. And we have bosses who are taking the responsibility for educating their staff on how to treat kids. I think that we've come a long way. We have a long way to go, And I think all you have to do is pick up the LA Times or the Orange County Register or Google sexual abuse or child abuse, and you will come up with at least 25 articles in the last week that highlight teachers, coaches, people of trust in the community who have misused that trust and caused serious trauma for a child. And so we do have miles to go.
So would you say that these 25 articles that we look at, would you say that those are the articles represent something that's going wrong with our culture, or on the other hand, does that represent something that's going right with our culture?
You know, I tend to be on the glasses half full side, but it definitely is a glass that only has half of what it should have in it. So what I would say, you know, more clearly is we have gotten our collective sort of awareness of this issue has risen significantly, and that's contributing to these kinds of situations getting identified and action being taken and people being, these situations surfacing in the public eye. Every time we do that, we all read the article and understand the issue a little bit better, and that informs the way that we think about the world and hopefully informs the way that we begin to act in this world. So I think that has a significant positive impact. But I can't overlook the fact, and that is that it is happening, and that's why it's in the news. And well, it should not be happening, and so that's not good news.
Is the reality that it's happening, and it has been happening for a long, long time?
Very much so.
Seeing a big uptick in this kind of behavior. What we're really seeing is we're seeing a spotlight on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. It's very difficult to factor out of all the different things that influence whether or not these issues get out in the public eye or get documented. But there are interesting surveys that talk to families in their homes and try to identify kind of the general health and interaction of a family. And I think as a whole, things have improved over the last two decades. We are still, you know, so on average, I think we continue to improve as parents become aware of the longer-term impacts of the way that they interact with their children. So that's definitely true. But we still are putting children in harm's way, and we still, as a group, have among us those who are bent more toward child abuse. And, you know, in order to take a preventionary approach to the situation, we've got to understand why it is, what it is that motivates an adult to abuse a child, and then address that issue.
I want to talk a little bit about this whole notion of intervention when we get back. Can you stick around after the break?
I would love to. Thank you, Will.
There's something happening out there today. All across America, we're seeing encouraging signs of economic recovery. Businesses are once again thinking about new growth, and new opportunities are emerging. But it raises the question, is your company positioned to take full advantage of the economic recovery and the opportunities it presents? Maybe it's time to ask, how has the recession impacted your business model? Is your business as relevant as it once was? Should you consider entering new markets or expanding into new categories? And what do customers really value about their relationship with you? The golden thread through all these questions and the answer to each and every one of them can be found in just one place. Your brand. It's much deeper than your logo and much bigger than your advertising. Your brand is the enabler of your entire business strategy. Rikus Baird is a brand strategy firm that can help. They specialize in business branding. They've helped hundreds of companies from startups to Fortune 500 leverage their brands to drive growth. They can do the same for yours. It's really quite simple. Find out more, just visit brandingbusiness.com. That's www.brandingbusiness.com. And plant the seed for economic growth.
Most sales training programs involve a 1 or 2 day seminar where some alleged expert gives what he claims are the secrets to sales. At Sandler Training, we know sales is a hard business. That's why we employ continual reinforcement with ongoing training and individual coaching to ensure your success. And with over 200 training centers worldwide, you won't fail because we won't let you. Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
Well, we've been talking to Scott Trotter, the executive director for the Child Abuse Prevention Center in Orange County. Scott, it seems to me that if I look at this in the model, the metaphor of Alcoholics Anonymous, that what we have is a culture, we had a culture who was in deep denial of what was in fact going on. What I hear you talking about our culture doing now is making an intervention and talking about the consequences of continuing this denial. And that denial, you know, as it comes into consciousness, that has a lot of anxiety tied to it. Does this model fit in terms of, do you think this has any bearing on what we're seeing right now in our culture?
I think it's got a lot of value, Will. That's a very good reference. We are trying to collectively change the habits of our community. And habits are complicated things to change. You know, they start with some sort of trigger, and then they move into some kind of habitual routine that results from that trigger. And then you end up with a habit because there's a reward at the end. You know, if we're stuck watching TV and we really want to get out and go for a run, we have to change that habit of watching TV, and it starts with understanding those three basic components of a habit, sort of a trigger, a routine, and then a reward that comes at the end. And if you look and apply that to Alcoholics Anonymous, I think a lot of their curriculum would suggest a similar model. If you look at somebody who's inclined to abuse their child, it's a very similar pattern that they're in. Now, we don't understand fully, everything there is to understand about every person who abuses children. People do it for a variety of reasons. But a simple habit framework helps people sort of wrap their head around understanding, what is it that triggers my anger level or my predisposition to treat a child the way that I'm treating it? What is it that triggers that? And sometimes it's a variety of things. It could be a lack of control. It can be a my life is so stressful, there's too much financial pressure. It can be my own sort of anxiety about making my environment stable. But a child, it can be a very easy trigger in those situations where, you know, a lot of what children do is develop themselves and they create chaos. So linking that, addressing that trigger, and then moving into the routine, the behavior that comes from that trigger, and then understanding what reward is gained by a parent who abuses their child. You know, they get some satisfaction of exerting their power. That's one theory. Well, I break it down to a simple model that each person can use, because as a community, if we understand that we have a habit that relates to not fully addressing child abuse, then maybe we can start to understand why we're not fully addressing child abuse. As the epidemic that it is, you know, this is something that influences a good 25% to 30% of our population at a minimum, and influences everybody in the way that we interact, how many ideas come to the surface in our organizations that are really great ideas that can save us, and the fact that somebody who's been abused in their background is less likely to engage in risky, sort of healthy organizational behavior. In marital relationships, and we see a direct correlation of a history of abuse with divorces. In taking civic responsibility, there's a direct correlation between those who end up in jail and the likelihood that they've been abused in their background. You know, all of these things relate back to how we're treated in the first 5 years of our life. So helping our community understand, it breaks down to these habits that are formed at a very early stage. And then raising our collective awareness of what can we do. And most of us think, you know, I'm coming back to your question, Will, of why is it that it's a difficult thing as a community to address? Well, part of it is, yeah, it's sort of a not-so-fun topic to talk about, but the other part is we feel that we don't have a solution for it. And yet we do, and each one of us can do something about it. We can reach out to those who we think need help. You know, naturally, you can support nonprofits like ours and organizations that are doing really great work. And it's not just the Child Abuse Prevention Center, by the way. There are all kinds of organizations that are lifting the importance of children and the way they're treated by their families, their schools, their communities, and, you know, developed into really great adults. So, you know, you can pick the phone up and find one of those organizations. But you can also reach out to anybody in your family or extended family, or your, most of us say, in-laws, you know. It's always somebody else who has the issue, right? But you can reach out to those in your very near community, whether it's your neighborhood or family, and just say, hey, I want to listen to you. Sounds like you've got an issue. Let's talk about it.
Well, Scott, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, I want to take our airplane up a little bit higher into the sky. Really do appreciate the intervention and the programs that you are doing at the very local level, at the family level. I mean, that's essential. What I'm interested in is, where is the conversation in the community that would mirror what you said earlier when you said 50 years from now we want to have no child abuse? Can we make that a community goal?
I would love to, and that is what we are committed to. We, as an organization, will not be able to do this alone. So great that you bring that up. At the Child Abuse Prevention Center, we have three strategies. Strategy one is to directly serve families at risk. Strategy two is to educate those that we can't directly serve, and that includes the entire community. So to rally behind this 50-year vision, the eradication, if you will, of child abuse, that's going to take some very healthy discussions. It's going to take some awareness around major events, and it's going to take coming up with solutions so that people can talk about it and then also have the confidence that they're going to be able to bring up the topic and have a good, positive solution to it. The way that we are beginning to go about that is by making sure that we've got resources available. You know, we've got a Facebook page at Child Abuse Prevention Center. We've also got Twitter. We've got a website. We have people like you, Will, that are talking about the issue. We have solutions. What we hope to do is create enough interest and intelligence in a group of people, and we call this group our Blue Ribbon Society, who are facile enough, who understand interesting aspects of child abuse and how to prevent it, so that they can carry that forward and bring that into their workplace or bring that into their communities or talk about it at church and raise the areas that are challenges right now. You know, single moms are under so much duress. Teenage pregnancy is a big issue. There are very few girls who give birth who 10 years later wouldn't have said, I would have been a better mom if I waited a decade. Substance abuse. There are some very difficult issues like sex slaves and immigration. But there are also some families that live in the nicest communities in Orange County and L.A. County who are vulnerable to abuse. And there isn't enough reaching out to them to help them. So as a community, it's an awareness campaign first, Will, and then second, it's making sure that everybody knows that they can do something about it.
So help me to understand. I mean, think about this from a business perspective. If we were to make the connection that what we're doing today with regard to child abuse will definitely, clearly affect how many people are in prison 20 years from now. We could make that statement, couldn't we?
Yes, and we have made that statement. You know, a lot of the studies that I cited earlier in the hour correlate that a dollar spent today would save $20 in the future. That $20 is triggered by the prison population. It includes, you know, rehabilitating criminals. It includes violence that ends up with people in hospitals. It includes rehab programs, and it includes recovery from death. So it runs the gamut. Economically, though, the business argument, if you will, is let's spend some effort now, not just finding the deepest, darkest pockets of child abuse, but finding the behavior in all of us that can lead to this. And let's invest now in the kids who are going to be parents in 20 years, you know, so that we have, come 2035, we have really great parents who have broken a generational cycle.
And this moves from a moral issue to being one of community support, direction, vision. I mean, we know very well we can do Measure M over and over again. We can provide for transportation regulations. We can make sure we have clear air. We've made those kind of changes. It seems to me that we could do the same thing by saying by 2035, we want to have fewer people in prison, we want to have better parenting, and we want to have zero child abuse.
I am completely with you. If we took a look at our funds, how as we spend them as a community right now, and identify how much we spend in reaction and recovery from harm as opposed to how much we spend on prevention, it would start to make things clear and stark as to what kind of future we are prescribing. We are not spending nearly enough resources. And I mean money, we can measure it that way, but I also mean collectively in terms of time. You know, a lot of my friends from the private sector days get calls from me to volunteer their time on Saturday afternoons to give back to their community. And the more that they can do that, they don't just directly impact what's going on in their community. They also learn about their community, and their mind changes, and they become more aware. And they come back to their office or their work and influence others around them. So, you know, I'm talking a little bit about a squishy influence model, but I'm also talking very practically about the more dollars we spend and the more professional thinking that we place on this issue of child abuse and how to prevent it now, the more that we do that, the greater future we have. And it directly ties to the kind of speeches that you hear our president give and our presidents of years past. Is this the nation you want? Or do you want a nation of greatness? And you can apply that thinking, yeah, to technology and education, but you also have to apply it to the neediest in our community. And the neediest aren't necessarily those below the poverty line. They're those that are below the 18-year-old line. Yeah, that's where we need to be focused. How do we develop these kids and eliminate abuse and allow them to reach their potential so they're great kids?
So, Scott, let's move you up the food chain for a moment. I mean, you know, we can get back to being the executive director of the Orange County Child Abuse Prevention Center. Let's move up, and I don't even know if there's a position like this, but let's move you up to the CEO of Orange County. Let's focus on the culture like you would in a company, right? You would focus on how do we build the culture in this company that's going to help us move forward to accomplish our goals. What could we do from that perspective using the tools that we have in Orange County? I mean, we know how to go out and generate leads and close deals and nurture people to help them make a decision. We know how to do that. What could we do in terms of not just a PR campaign, but a campaign that would help people actually change what they do that would help us accomplish the three goals that we just talked about, of reducing prison population, improving parenting, and reducing child abuse to zero? What could we do in the next year in terms of, you know, we've got this internet. What could we do to drive people to it. I don't like that word, but to attract people to consider these things?
Well, I clear first, I love my job. So this is fantastic. And yet I very much appreciate the promotion. I'm sure that I'm grossly, but since you've asked the question, I'll go for it. I'll give you the answer. I think first, as CEO of Orange County, that in this fantasy world that you've constructed, Orange County does some things really well, really well. And we are, on the whole, a very compassionate group. We're very conservative, right, on the whole, and so we really prize accountability and self-sufficiency, and that's a wonderful thing. So we have ended up with some really great services that, unfortunately, as great as they are and as deep as they go, they're very siloed. So they'll address a specific issue for a specific person, but that person, as an example, a foster child, might end up working through a foster situation for a couple of years. But the handoff between these very good silos sometimes drops off. So culture change step one in your challenge, you know, be the CEO of Orange County, would be let's get people to communicate. And I don't mean that in kind of a broad, untangible way. I mean, if there is a child that is challenged with his or her background, let's make sure that we've identified that person and we have, instead of a criminal record, we have a help record, something that will wrap around that child and explain to all of the people who might touch that child. That could be CHOC, Children's Hospital. It could also be Orangewood. It could be the Child Abuse Prevention Center. It could be the juvenile detention system. But let's make sure that we're all sharing information so we know, like a parent would, a healthy parent that is, what the next best step is for that child. And we're communicating about that kid and giving him a great step forward. All too often, especially as we're drawing down on our resources and working through a difficult economy, we drop that part. That part of sticking with a kid and carrying them through. So cultural change number one, let's not fight over budgets. Let's collaborate over budgets and embrace the fact that we need to change and find the best ways to change. But let's change around the need in the community, not change around protecting my job or not change around what we've been doing for the last 20 years. Let's change around where the need is and then embrace new ideas and adjust and build new things underneath those needs.
What else?
Second, I think, if you're talking about impacting a culture, it's one thing to say something, it's another thing to actually do something. And I think the doing and the results end up driving a culture change. So I think committing to those who are in need right now and wrapping services around them and showing the actual impact. I think taking organizations like the healthcare agency and the social services agency, which are governmental entities, and marrying them up with brilliantly run organizations like Edwards Life Sciences, who spend a lot of time in the community helping, Broadcom, Western Digital, these organizations that employ a lot of people. Bring them together to understand the nature of what's happening to children in our community, hand off some responsibilities to their volunteer base, bring their thinking into our organizations. So I'm not naive enough to think that we can marry the private sector with the public sector, but I am optimistic enough to know that there are great ideas sitting in these privately held and publicly held companies that can help influence the way that our government is operated, and to a certain extent, vice versa. So marrying the resources in the community and initiating a discussion on that level.
Based upon the goals that we have, right?
Yeah, exactly. Targeted at those three goals that you outlined.
I mean, it seems to me that if we had, it doesn't have to be those three, but those three are the ones we've talked about. If those, we just said those are the three goals that we have, and we think that will have a significant impact on the tax burden that we have. Even it just reducing the prison population, to say nothing of the health care impact, and the all the, you know, the adjudication program and all of that, we could reduce a lot of costs, overhead. That's at a very basic level, looking at the bottom line. We know that if we do that, that'll have a lot of, some great life-changing value to the people who are affected. But it seems to me that getting, if we could get the CEOs of Edwards Lifesciences, Broadcom, what was the other one you mentioned?
Western Digital.
Yeah, Western Digital. If we could get the CEOs to simply sit down and you know, in a day or two, wouldn't take all that long, but over a period of a week, I'll bet they could come up with an agreement that these would be great goals to accomplish in the next 20 years. Then, you see, as the CEO of Orange County, and these are CEOs in Orange County, it's obvious what they do. They delegate that to people to execute. And we have a tremendous community who can execute this. I mean, you take a look at some of the resource. Just look at what's going on at Saddleback Church. That's an example of what can be done in terms of using technology, using the resources that we have in Orange County to accomplish great things. And it seems to me that what we don't have is we don't have those tremendous goals. We're not committed to the accomplishing of those kind of goals for our own community.
Well, I agree with you, Will. I agree with you that, and maybe the issue is, and if you anointed me CEO and I grabbed on to five of those goals, the issue is we as a community have not resolved around the five practical goals that will have an immediate impact on our community. I think, yeah. You know, it's great you bring up Saddleback because they have done such a wonderful job of saying, hey, everybody, where is the purpose in your life?
Mm-hmm.
And who is going to deny that they couldn't use a bit more focus on purpose and that mm-hmm. that should be the prime driver in your life? And everybody gains from that. It is such a wonderful example of the things that can be accomplished in a community. But you're right, as a CEO of Orange County, you know, to primarily say, look, we're going to spend some resources and time and energy to reduce the prison population, but the way we're going to do that is in a preventionary way today. And we're mm-hmm. going to save ourselves money in the future and create a much more stable society. So sub-goals, let's go out and build healthier families. Let's look at the children who are being disenfranchised. Let's invest our time and effort to problem solving so that those kids are in more stable situations. You know, secondly, let's get out and teach people how to parent really well. And let's make sure that when people get in parenting situations, they want to be in those parenting situations, right? They're not accidentally there, or they're not there when they don't have the resources, time, effort, energy, or interest.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're, you know, two really important things that a parent should have. One is passion and interest, and the other is some kind of mastery, some kind of experience of doing it well, whether that's raising a puppy into a dog or whether that's being a camp counselor, whether that's, you know, actually being out and being the captain of a Little League team, you know, interacting with people and mastering it, and then become a parent. You know, so
yeah.
if as a goal we can set that people become parents when they actually want to and they're capable of, that would eliminate a lot of stress. That's
right.
Another preventionary angle. And, you know, last, let's look at the children who are vulnerable right now, and let's get out there and build something around them.
And it seems to me that if we said, you know, if the CEO of Orange County said, these are the goals that I have for the next 20 years, I want my direct reports to sit around and figure out how to do this and look at the tremendous resources in just those three companies, just those three, to say nothing of the 13,000 other companies in Orange County, but just those three, what an impact they could be making.
Yeah, Will, we may be stumbling on to, not totally new, because a lot of these companies are currently doing this, but a good model for sort of social venture nonprofits to partner up with a private sector company. And, the beauty is there are companies, Ingram Micro, the three that I told you, that we've been talking about, that all reach out to the community and partner with nonprofits and make it happen. I think, though, you've hit upon something. To strike these goals in a unified way, what a wonderful thing to have, a Mike Masalam up over at Edwards Life Sciences sitting with a nonprofit or the county CEO and saying, here are the big seven that we're going to tackle over the next 5 years. And here's, here's our piece of the action.
I mean, we've seen communities. I mean, we do it in Laguna Beach. We've seen communities that say, we're going to read this book together. And they could do it. They pull it off. I mean, and like I said before, we know that Caltrans can manage all of our transportation issues. Yeah, it's not perfect, but we're a whole lot different than we were 20 years ago. And we know, I mean, I came out as a child in 57 to go to Disney with my parents, and I thought I had tuberculosis because it was so hard to breathe here because of the smog. It's not here in the degree that it was before because people had a goal of fixing that. Now, there's a lot of controversy over regulations, but we fixed it.
Yeah, really, really great points. And certainly, for me, there is a reason to be passionate about this frontier, and the frontier I'm talking about is that of human development. We understand what it is to be a healthy, really great person so much better than we did years and years ago, even a decade ago. For those of us who are looking for a place to have an impact, my graduating class in business school back in the early 90s was rushing to understand how electronic commerce was going to influence our business models. And a lot of us got involved there, and it was very exciting. Others got involved in Wall Street and the evolution of markets and how efficient information was flowing back and forth and how that might influence decisions. I think right now, 2012, there has never been a better time to help people understand how to come together and treat each other really well so that great things come from it.
Scott, do you want to work on this?
I would love to.
All right. So when we finish, I'm going to give you a call, and we'll put in our calendars a time to get together and put a plan together.
Will, it's a great idea, and I'm honored to be part of it. This is fantastic.
Well, it's something that I to be looking at what we want our community to be, and then to enlist the kind of firepower, the resources that we have in this county, that to me is astounding, just astounding. Well, tell us, Scott, tell us what we can do right now. What can people do who are listening to this if they just said, I'm ready to go? How can I help the Child Abuse Center, Prevention Center of Orange County? What can they do? Who can they call?
Well, I'll tell you, call us directly, or better yet, go to our website. Just Google Child Abuse Prevention Center Orange County, and you'll go there and understand us. If you want to take action immediately, tomorrow night at Whittier Law School, our Blue Ribbon Society is honoring a champion of children in this community, Kim Kripe, who took chalk through out of the Orange County bankruptcy and turned it into one of the greatest hospitals in the nation focused on children. She is partnering with us to raise awareness for Child Abuse Prevention Month, which is April. So, come on out to Whittier Law School tomorrow night at 5:30. If you would like to get involved directly helping us do our work all month, of April. We are doing activities to help our clients and raise awareness. We also have a gala coming up on Mother's Day Eve, which is May 12th, and would invite anybody who would like to come and learn more about us and have a really tasteful evening. And if you come to our website and want to get involved right away, my email address is on there. Hit it and send me a note, and we'll connect and see how you can help us lead this cause.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Scott, for being with us today and taking your time. And I will give you a call right after the show, and we'll see what we got next.
Great, Will. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott.
Bye-bye.
It's amazing what a pilgrim on the 405 can discover just walking up and down, driving back and forth, walking to and fro on the earth, and seeing what's there. We have tremendous resources in Orange County. Obviously, we have some tremendous issues that we can make a difference by attending to, bringing them into awareness, into consciousness, and then using the kind of skills that we've developed in California, in Orange County, in terms of developing goals and then coming up with plans to solve those problems. I think we've got some exciting things ahead of us. So, wonderful to be with you today. This is the Pilgrim on the 405. I'm looking for people who want to talk about their passion, whether it's in business or in social services or in anything else that contributes to the quality of life in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405, the only show that takes you out past the frontiers of what you thought was possible.
You're tuned to OC Talk Radio, a steady stream of stimulating conversations.